Well, welcome to the first ever TheBowPod.com.
Yep, it's part of a new podcast series based loosely on archery, but really talking about, you know, talking about all aspects of the sport, recurve, compound, competition news, technical stuff from all around the world.
I'd like to say archery and archery culture.
Yeah, okay. And your presenters for the podcast are going to be Michael Peart.
And Liam Grimwood. And today we're joined by extra special guest, straight off the podium, Mr. Simon Terry.
Hello to the podcast listeners.
Look at that.
Simon's not one for media, but he's loving it today.
Yeah. Straight off the podium there.
It'd be important to note to the listeners, obviously, that we're sat in a hotel room in sunny Antalya, Turkey at the moment, where we've just completed the second stage of the World Archery World Cup Series. So we're going to be talking about some of the latest happenings from this week, aren't we, Mike?
We certainly are, because it's been an eventful week, and where should we kick off then? I've got a few lot of things I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's just jump straight in, go on.
Well, start off with, we had a world record this week.
We did.
Our Korean friend Im Dong-yong jumped in there with a 6.94. A lot of us watching the results thought we were going to get the magical 700, but then it just started to get a bit windy in the afternoon.
A 3.51 front half, which looked... Yeah, I would say pretty massive, even by my standards. I mean, my front half for the qualifying round was also a 3.51 this week.
With your shout out with the grapes,
shooting a compound bow. So yeah, it was impressive bit of shooting.
But then it just got a bit windy, didn't it?
Yeah,
and he just let a few.
I think that's the thing to, you know, with this this World Cup being as close to the sea as we are here, is that the weather is changing all the time, you know, as the tide comes in and out, we're constantly getting different weather conditions and weather patterns.
Totally.
And almost today, at the end of Simon's match, I thought, at one stage, I took my sunglasses off and thought, oh, we could see a little bit of rain here, maybe, you know, the skies were blackening up a bit. And the conditions all week were very changeable, but I'd say, in the most part, they were pretty good, and that was, reflected by the scores that were shot.
Yeah,
this
week. I've had some shoots here where there was hardly anyone getting over 1,300, let alone doing a 700. The one thing I would like to bring up is I did actually beat him this week.
that doesn't sound really... Unless it's at backgammon, Michael, I'm not really sure that's...
No, I want to add an effect
here. Very likely.
On the third end of the second half, him shot a 54.
Yeah.
And unless I'm gravely mistaken, I believe I got a 55. So
congratulations.
So when it comes to that all-important third end of the second half, I got him by a point, so... I feel quite good about that.
So probably in sets it was, 11-1 then to him, I'm going to say.
I'd say that'd be a fair reflection, yeah. So what have you... What's the week like been for you, Lou?
Not too bad for me. I think, the headline for this week, again, is just sort of more domination from Rio Wild, really. Just, you know, outdoor season's only just got going. So far we've had World Cup in Shanghai. Other big tournaments have been the Gator Cup and also the Arizona Cup, which are big USAT events in the US and now obviously Turkey. And Rio is 4-for-4 now. You know, he's won them all, and he hasn't just won them. He's really dominated them. It looks so far. And to be honest with you, watching the final yesterday, a world class athlete like Braden Gallanty, he kind of got schooled in a way, I would say.
Yeah, he did, and. The only thing that, as an outsider just looking in, the thing I noticed with Rio is he's got so much mass weight on his bow.
Yeah, that's the main difference that you see with, I think, Rio compared to most of the other top shooters. I think the thing that stands out for everyone is that mass weight.
And, it is. I mean, I think we're talking, Braden's got 4 ounces on the front and Rio's got 21.
Yeah, I mean, we've got an interview with Braden that we recorded earlier on today, coming up later, but... Yeah, definitely. That's the Braden's running 4 on the front, and Rio's running 21 ounces on what I think is a 32 or 33 inch stabilizer. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge amount of weight out there, and I think that's got to be giving him, you know, it's some kind of advantage, because really, when you look at him technically, form wise, there's nothing special. Nothing about what he's doing is different, other than the way that his bow is weighted, and obviously there's a mental aspect, I think, to how good he is.
Always.
But yeah, really in the last year or so, he's since quitting his full-time job and shooting full-time, he's really just, he's taken it to the next level. So many wins this year already with the World Indoor Championships and the, you know, the World Indoor Challenge and just everything really. And he really has taken it to the next level, I think. And if you look at, you know, what I would class as like a finesse shooter, like Braden, or maybe someone like Pierre-Julien Deloche, is that I'd just like to know, we've just been joined by, fresh on the podium, also Larry Godfrey and Alan Wills are currently messing around with
my clicker,
trying to cause a bit of a distraction. But yeah, like I was saying, the finesse shooters like Braden and like Deloche, is that, you know, it's very much about rhythm and about timing, and it looks so consistent with Rio. It just looks more like pure strength to me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he doesn't look like he's in great shape, but the guy's got a big set of arms.
Yes,
he's rocking some pythons out there.
He is, and you can't deny the success he's having. Yeah. You know, it's one thing to speculate on theories, but really when you're talking about raw results, Rio's got it made. Seems we've been joined by these wonderful guys. Should we move on to the highlight of this weekend, the closing match, which was GB Men's Rico Team versus India. Yeah. And in case anyone's not up to date with things, it was a resounding victory for the GB men.
It was. It definitely it was an impressive performance out there, guys. And to be honest with you, you know, I obviously travel, shoot a lot of the tournaments with you boys, and I haven't been, you know, impressed or really pleased to watch you guys like that. I think since the World Champs back in 2007 in Germany, where, you know, you really looked like a good, strong, cohesive unit. And again, I think we're seeing that again. You three boys looked so good, so calm, you know, performing so well as a team out there today. And
you didn't miss a beat, frankly.
Yeah, in good time and ready for the Olympics. So
what do you want to say?
Yeah, we won it last year, so we've actually got a good little thing in our heart for Turkey, I think.
We all seem to do well in Turkey, yeah. We beat the Koreans a few years ago. We had a silver medal, gold medal, fourth place, I think, and a bronze as well, and now another win. So.
And, of course, Simon had his individual gold as well. Two years back, Simon?
3 years ago, I think it was.
Is it really 3 years now? Is it?
Time flies, isn't it?
Okay, it does.
Yeah, so, yeah, Turkey's been good for us, and yeah, especially today. It was a tricky wind. You know, you're aiming in the middle of red, get arrows drift over, but you can't feel anything on your bow.
Yeah.
And so that's the hardest bit, having to aim off, knowing, you think, oh my God, is it going to go exactly where you aim? You just had to trust your shot.
I certainly had one where it didn't move.
Yeah.
It went off to the right this time, and the majority of them were drifting in. And I changed my setup slightly, just going on the practice butts, put a click on the button. I moved my sight pin at least 2 or 3 mil,
mm-hmm.
because the arrow flight for me, being left-handed, was it was really kicking.
Yeah, I guess the thing difference between being a right-handed archer and a left-handed archer, and the wind was just obviously a constant wind coming off the sea, right to left.
But I just adjusted my sight because it was constant wind.
Yeah.
You know, but they say during the match I got caught once where it just died, and I went off to the right, but then the majority of the time they were just drifting in.
And it didn't make me look that bad for me going right as well.
I'm going to jump in as a bit of a novice when it comes to recurve here. Obviously, you know, from a compound point of view, we're, you know, most of the time I would do aiming off and sometimes adjusting the sight for, you know, if it's a very constant wind. But you mentioned adjusting your button there. Obviously, that's something, you know, we don't have. I would never move my rest mid-tournament. Is that something that you do regularly, and what kind of effect does that have on the arrow flight?
There's not many people do it, and there's I think a lot of people are apprehensive about doing it, but when your bow's tuned, the bow's tuned to the weight, the arrows are tuned to the weight of the bow, so moving your button 3 or 4 clicks one way or the other doesn't actually change your group size. So if I'm a right-handed with a left-to-right wind, I'll put a couple of clicks on to more pressure on the button to fire it into the wind a bit more, just so you don't have to move your sight as much.
Mm.
And it's the same with a left-hander with an opposite wind, or if the wind's constant from the other way, it'll slacken it. So just so you don't have to aim off as much, or you don't have to adjust your sight, because you'll always, your bow's tuned properly.
You've got at least 2 or 3 clicks of a biter button. Either way, or more.
Other buttons are available, of course.
Just get that in. Biter.
But I think we'll all agree that when it comes to Olympic time, if it's not 90% of the archers on the field using biter buttons, will be amazed. If it's not
99%,
you know.
Well, that's the good thing about it. You can just click and change it from day to day.
Yeah, because I've had, you know, when I set my kit up at the beginning of the year, I fiddled with my button and I'd literally move the group sizes the same, stay the same, and I move them across the target. That's when I know the bow's tuned.
Okay, so looking forward now then, boys, to the, you know, obviously the Olympics is the ultimate goal for you guys, you know, in the coming months. But what are you going to kind of do to put the finishing touches to your preparations for the games, and what are you going to be doing, you know, in the meantime?
We've got the European champs first in Fortnite, and then Ogden.
Yeah, and we'll pretty much do what I think what we've done it we've did you know we've done here.
Yeah.
We'll just repeat it and see what happens. Because it is all, you just never know. We went against Malaysians first round here, and we tied 2-2-3, which is a world-class score, and we beat them in a shoot-off.
Yeah.
On another day, they could have beaten us, and we'd have been out first round. So it can go like that.
It is a fine line, because it would have been easy for you to have shot exactly the same, and you'd be going home now, been knocked out the first round. But you still delivered a world-class performance.
Yeah.
As it turns out, you're going home with gold medals around your neck. But that's how it is on World Archery now. There's so many teams out there who can shoot good world-class scores.
We're not set up like snooker or tennis, where, you know, it's predominantly done over a lot of different sets.
Mm.
So you could lose a couple of rounds and you'd be all right. You could still win the match. With our sport, it's such on a fine line that you, even though you're shooting world-class scores, you can still get knocked out.
Talking of world-class athletes, me and Michael had the privilege of catching up with Braden Galantine earlier on today before his team round match.
Interesting talk, very honest.
Yeah, it was. We're gonna cut straight to that now, so you guys can all listen to that.
Hello and welcome again. We're back for our first ever celebrity interview. Liam, you do the big intro.
I guess he is a celebrity in the archery world.
Absolutely.
And doesn't really need too much of an introduction, but we're joined this afternoon right before his team match play with Braden Galantine. All right, man?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great, and we're thrilled to have you here. We appreciate it.
Yep. So Braden, of course, took a silver medal in the individual category yesterday in Antalya, Turkey, and is up in just a couple hours' time, I think, with the team round, where he's obviously representing USA, joined by Dave Cousins and Rio Wild. Just talk us through your week this week, kind of how it's been for you, and, you know, high points, low points and stuff of the week.
Coming into the week, I've been having a little bit of a struggle with target panic, switching back and forth between my back tension and my trigger release. Ended up shooting my trigger through qualification in the match play, and I seemed to have a little bit better results, felt a little bit more comfortable executing a clean shot, and I think it showed in the results that I was able to get. Ended up in the gold medal match yesterday, and the wind got the best of me on one end, and that pretty much told the rest of the story. Other than that, I felt like it was a pretty strong week.
I thought you had a strong final. I mean, you had one end where all the arrows just moved over, and you got a 999. But apart from that, I thought you were pretty damn solid, and I thought you looked great.
Thank you.
And Rio
felt really good up there.
Rio didn't give you a chance, did he?
He's on a roll right now, and I don't know what he's doing different than everyone else, but it's working for him.
Do you think maybe bow speed played a factor yesterday? Because Rio must have a couple of feet per second on you.
Yeah, he's probably shooting a little bit faster. Not sure it was a huge factor, as the practice field was pretty consistent with the main shooting arena. But it's something I need to look into, and possibly something I could change.
Yeah, from your experience, does it tend to be more important to have a faster bow or go for the arrow weight more so? So, a heavier arrow up maybe towards a 400 grain arrow, or are you looking more for speed, bow speed, which makes more difference and impact on your drift to you?
I think at 50 meters, it might be a trade-off closer to speed versus the kinetic energy and the heavy mass arrow that we're looking for at 90 meters. I think speed might be more of a factor.
Okay, have you tried the, since we're all still kind of new to the 50-meter thing, have you tried a larger diameter arrow at all yet? Or I notice you're using the Nano Pro at the moment. Have you maybe tried the XR or one of the bigger shafts, Carbon Express?
Mode? I haven't tried the one of the CXL arrows at 50 meters. I want to stick with the tried and true method of using the smaller diameter, heavier mass arrow. So I don't really see a CXL with the massive diameter being a good option.
Looking at your final, one of the things that was obvious from
someone observing was the difference in the mass weight of the boats. Rio seems to go for a really heavy boat, like 21 ounces at the front, and I don't know how many at the back. Yours is sort of a midweight boat. Do you want to explain how many ounces you put around and how that affects you in the wind?
I've got 4 ounces up front, 6 off the back. It really works to balance the bow pretty well. It aims great. I found that to set the best at a full draw for me. With Rio's bow, it's a little bit heavier. It probably sits in the middle and takes more effort with the wind to blow him off the center. But when he does blow off the center, I'd imagine it's a struggle to get it back in the middle.
I would too.
I think if I think back a couple of years now, I think it was, I'm going to say 2007, it might have been different, but me and you shot against each other for bronze medal at the World Cup stage in Dover in the UK.
Great shot.
And and you were shooting for Hoyt back then, and I was obviously still shooting for Matthews. But I remember back then you had a lot more tip weight on your bow, and you had the stabilizer pointing forwards, but like your side rod pointing forwards back then as well. In terms of how the bow would have been much more front heavy than the rig and the setup that you're running right now.
Right. I made this major change of switching the bar to the back for indoors. Whereas before, when I had the bar off the front, it was more of a form for outdoors. The bow really came out and popped really well. But it's not that big of a deal indoors. Indoors, I really focus on the aim more than the execution. And I just kind of carried over to outdoors this year.
Yeah, well, your indoor season was pretty sick this year, I'd say, especially with that. Was it like an 1197 or something?
Was that what it was? Yes, 1197 at our U.S. selection for the Indoor World Championships. Started off with a 598 and then came out after lunch and shot a 300 on the first 30. Instantly, I'm thinking new world record, and I ended up dropping one in the 16th end that was called out by a judge, but kept rolling for a 599. It was really nice.
Yeah, so that, I mean, you didn't get any major, well, you won the face-to-face tournament, but no, what I'd say, real big wins like Nimes or Vegas this year, but your indoor season was so consistent and so solid, and your scores were right up there, world indoors as well. Yeah. What do you kind of put that down to? I felt like you almost took a step up in your score in this indoor season. It was, you went one better again, if that's actually possible.
Yes, I ended up finishing the season shooting over 595 at every event I went to, which was pretty remarkable. I spent a lot of time at the training field this indoor season, 5-6 hour days, and I think that's what it takes. Not really focusing on score and training, but actually the shot and rhythm and consistency. And that's what's helped me take that step farther.
So how would your training for indoors, say the Indoor World Champs, differ to how you practice for outdoor tournaments?
It's pretty close to the same. I do a little bit more wind training, obviously, with outdoors. That's important to maintain your rhythm and your shot execution, no matter what's happening around you. With all those added variables, that's important to practice. But other than that, I pretty much I focus on the shot and consistency. And if I notice a form flaw, I'll make a plan to fix that. And that's what I'll train for the next few days.
Yeah. So what's the plan then for the rest of the season?
The rest of the season, I'm actually moving in a few weeks, so it's gonna take a little bit out of my archery. But once I'm settled down again, right back at it. You know, 5 hour days, training at 50 meters and just giving it all I've got.
Yeah. Are you doing any gym work? I know we talked a little bit maybe a couple months ago about core stability stuff, and you were saying you were doing some work on that. What you kind of developed any further with that? Or
I'm doing a fair bit of core work, working with the P90X system to get my abs and hip flexors all strengthened. I think stability in the wind is going to be increased. I've definitely noticed in my aim indoors. As far as cardio or muscle training, I'm not doing that during the season. I like to do that in the fall when I've got a little bit of time off, because I feel like with weight training, you're kind of working on muscle confusion and to gain muscle mass. Mm-hmm. Whereas with archery, you want your muscles to maintain a certain memory, and I feel like you might be a little bit destructive towards your game.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds great. Well, I just want to this afternoon. What do you rate your chances? Let's make some predictions here. We're looking outside. It's pretty windy, I must admit.
Is it Denmark this afternoon you face? So you got, you know, guys like Martin Damsbo in there.
Didn't they knock you out?
They shot pretty damn good against you, I thought.
We lost to Denmark in the quarterfinals, but hopefully Braden's going to go out and avenge that this afternoon.
Yeah, when you've got guys in your team like Rio Wild and Dave Cousins, it's hard not to have all the confidence in the world. Even if you have a bad match, you've got two guys that are, you know, they're some of the best in the world, and it's nice to have them to fall back on. Not saying that I'm going to have a bad round, but
no.
It's nice to relax and just shoot your game because you don't have to worry.
That's what team shooting's about. Well, good luck this afternoon, and obviously we'll follow up with the results, and you can get all the results on archery.org, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, man. So we need to definitely thank Braden for coming along and doing that interview with us today, and that's something hopefully we're going to be doing, you know, in the future with all of our podcasts, is getting, you know, obviously we're really lucky to have Simon and the lads in it.
We can't take them for granted.
But yeah, trying to get, you know, real world-class shooters, you know, foreign shooters as well. This certainly is not just a UK-based thing. And
not at all.
To talk to us, and it was great to have Braden in there with us this afternoon, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah, I was surprised by, quite honest with you, I was surprised with how honest and frank he was.
Yeah.
To boom, go straight in there and say, oh, I'm dealing with target panic. Now, that's an issue that a lot of archers would, to say the least, try and sweep under the carpet and not mention. I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, I was quite surprised.
Braden's a very much kind of cards on the table kind of guy, mm-hmm. I think. And yeah, it really is a very real and genuine problem for, I'm going to throw it out there, 75% of the world's top shooters. I think that to get to that level, you're always kind of on the edge, and there's a lot of debate back and forth as to whether, you know, punching your trigger is the right way to go when it's windy or when it's really windy.
But you can pay a hell of a price for that, though. That's my issue with it. You can, you punch your trigger to get through a weekend and get that medal, but then you end up paying the price for the next 6 months. For me, I couldn't do that. I couldn't.
Yeah.
What the price I would pay for that one weekend would be, 6 months of misery.
Well, it's very much, you know, does the reward outweigh the cost?
Yeah.
That's what you got to ask yourself, really. You know, if it's, for example, if I was to say, okay, I'm going to totally ruin your shooting for the next 2 years, but you can have an Olympic gold medal for it. Simon, you're gonna
snatch my hand off for that?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Exactly.
It's an easier way to hit the middle in living and shooting in Blighty. It's got to be the way done.
Exactly. So it's something that I think all of us live with, and it's a very big reality. And for Braden, you know, who is a professional archer, he's trying to make a living off it. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, some of the tournaments, especially somewhere like Arizona, you know, I myself was on the podium at the Arizona Cup, I think 3-4 years ago now, something like that. Took second there, and it's very windy. And when you need to make a paycheck, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But it's not something I would recommend to, you know, for the average club archer to go out and think, oh, it's windy and I want to win my I want to win my club championships this weekend. I think that it's going to put you through a lot of heartache and you're not going to enjoy your archery as much. But I think for professional archers making a living from it, you maybe need to look at it a little bit differently. And sometimes got to do what you got to do to, you know, pay the bills.
True. But one thing I'd like to say, you said you think 75% of the archers on the field are maybe affected. But when I sit here and think about it, I can't actually think of a top level archer that I know who hasn't had that issue at some point in their career. So I'd be even tempted to say that it might actually be 100%.
Yeah.
And it's just the levels of effectiveness that people deal with it.
Yeah, when saying 75%, I'm talking about actually dealing with it currently.
All right, okay.
In the here and now, all or right. in the past 6 months, for example. Yeah. I mean, it's something that, I'm going to say 99.9% of top archers have dealt with at some point in their career. But yeah, it's always a clear and present danger, always.
It is. I'd like to move on to another topic, which is also one fraught with danger.
Yeah.
And that's the issue of bow poundage on a recurve.
Yeah.
Now, I'm shooting the heaviest bow I've ever shot, 52 pounds. Simon, what are you shooting at the moment?
49, I think.
Oh, that's quite light for you.
Gone down, yeah.
Quite conservative,
but, I was quite shocked to hear this week that Mr. Nespoli from Italy is actually shooting a 58 pound recurve.
Actually, a pound more than I'm shooting there we go. On my compound.
And this is on a recurve but bow.
We're saying that, and he actually set a new European
he
record.
He set a new European record of 688. So he's shooting 58 pounds successfully. And I just think that... as soon as I learned that, I went up and I shook his hand, because that is some serious weight, and it's not something we normally come across.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to relate this back to compound again. You know, it's like we were talking a little bit earlier on in the podcast about Rio and all those stabilizer weights.
Yep.
And I think sometimes, especially, you know, the way I'm looking at recurve in a very kind of clinical fashion, to where I don't really fully understand the, you know, the actual, the makeup of a perfect release. But for me, surely the more poundage you have on your fingers, the cleaner that string's going to come off. And for me, therefore, if you've physically got the capability to get behind that 58 pound,
which
get it back there and be strong with it and aim still enough, then surely, even if you and him have identical releases, because he's shooting another 5, 6, 7,
he should beat
9 pounds on Simon, his release is going to be cleaner and he should beat you and he should get less wind
drift. I would say if he shoots the same as me, he should beat me. But... I mean, how do you feel about this song? You've been around a long time.
There is a big, big but with this. It's all well and good shooting 58 pounds down the practice field when there's no stress or anything. Yeah, I can do that, no bother at all.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get into head-to-head and the tension's on, you start aiming about, you need to hit that 10, that's when it gets to... Oh, it does get powerful then.
Yeah.
And that's when your errors come in.
Yeah.
I can understand where Liam's coming from when he's saying, yeah, your release will, because it'll just rip itself out of your fingers.
It does feel, and especially at 90, I feel like it lets you get away with stuff.
But, oh my God, you know, I've seen it so many times. They just haven't got away with it. They'll pummel it into the, you know, the black or, you know. The...
I mean, he didn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, he walked away with a silver medal? No. In the mixed team, what did he get today?
Silver medal in the mixed team with teamed up with Valeva, yeah.
Yeah, he still made errors.
I know he did. I mean, I don't know for sure. Even though I was commentating,
I'm gonna throw it out there and say Valeva possibly shot a higher score.
That was exactly what I was about to throw down there. You know,
yeah.
But the European record, you can't take that away from him. That's a good score, 688.
But I think this is a common problem. Obviously, when we get to this kind of standard, and all you big lads are shooting, you know, 50 pounds plus. It's kind of like, you know, the local kid from the club who gets a set of 40-pound limbs, isn't it? Wants to shoot 40-pound. It's a real problem of people over, you know, overdoing it with the weight, isn't it? And what would be your advice then to kind of like a club-level shooter, Simon, in terms of weight?
You've just got to shoot what you're comfy to shoot with. You know, you've got to execute the shot properly and cleanly. There's no point of struggling, you know, to master the weight... and not hit the middle. You look at the Korean women, what are they, 42, 43, 44 pound?
Yeah.
And they give the blokes a run for their money.
Yeah, they do.
If they can do it, why can't the blokes do it? It's only I've been shooting better since I've gone down poundage.
Yeah.
Compared to last year.
Okay.
And you see Nespoli shooting the 58 pound.
It sounds horrendous.
That's going to bite him in the arse, I reckon. Really, he's going to hit
hard. You know, it's going to be a season in the spotlight, so
yeah,
we'll
well
be interesting to follow his progress.
He shot well a qualification.
He did. A European record. You can't take it away.
There wasn't the wind out there to move the bow about on the, you know, this afternoon.
He didn't have to have the stability, as it were, because
there was no wind.
He didn't need to
aim off of that poundage. I was aiming middle of the red.
Yep.
I'm 10 pound, you know, nearly 10 pound less.
Yep.
He just to aim in the middle and blast away, no problem at all. Why is he shooting sevens?
I think it's going to be something to follow keenly as the summer develops.
It's going to be interesting, I think.
So talking of you know, what we got coming up this season, obviously we talked before to Larry and Alan about what they've got coming up. Obviously, you know, the Ogden World Cup and then obviously the Olympic Games. But we've got to start next weekend in Oxford as the first stage of the UK National Series tournament. Are you going to be getting involved in them, Simon?
Yes, I'm down there all weekend, yeah.
Yep, same here. Love them. Wouldn't want to miss them unless I really, really... Unless I'm out. If I'm not out of the country, I'll be there.
Yeah, I think also this year it's going to be the first time we've actually got some internationals coming over. I know one of Matthew's top pro staff shooters, Martin Damsbow, is coming over.
Excellent.
He's top
guy, Martin.
He's going to be getting involved in the series this year. Obviously,
you guys run for your money then.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think this is due to the fact that some of the... You know, the big companies, Matthews, Hoyt, Easton, all putting contingency up for these events. And
they are really, you know, they're growing in popularity, I think, worldwide, hopefully, and, you know, really putting UK archery on the map. And they're certainly something that I'm going to be focusing a lot of my attention on this year. And that, and also obviously the European Pro Archery Series I'm going to be taking part in as well. But yeah, so it's a big summer of archery ahead of us.
I mean, for me, I've got, I think in 2 weeks I'm off to Cyprus for the European Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Really like the European Grand Prix. It's open shoot, so anyone can go. And yeah, good competition. And probably for the new archer on the scene, just a little less depth. Yeah. Top level is absolutely the same, but there's probably not quite the same depth. But I can't wait to get off there and then, yeah, off to Ogden. Well, I think that's sort of much wrapping it up. And thanks for joining us. This is obviously the first of hopefully many to come, and we're obviously finding our feet and trying to work our way through this. But I think...
Yeah, we're going to try and make this a regular podcast that we put out. You know, we're going to try and do as many of them as we can. Obviously, mine and Michael's schedules are busy, and we're not always going to be able to get interesting guests in, so there might not be too much point in doing
it. Yeah, I want to make sure it's worthwhile. I don't want to do it for the sake of it.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. So it's not going to be a monthly thing or a weekly thing, but it's going to be something we're going to try and get out there and just put out to you guys. And obviously, we want to start, you know, in future taking questions from the public. So you can follow myself on Twitter at @the_grip120 or add me on Facebook and send me questions.
And for me, it's @archerymichael on Twitter, and I'm Michael Peart on Facebook, obviously. And also the other thank you one we want to give is we want to thank for the sort of production on this podcast is being brought to you by Archers Apps. There's a range of archery-specific apps for all your iOS devices. I'm currently using one of their prototypes on the arrow plotting, which I can't wait for that to be commercially available. And I also use their reversal timer for doing all of my archery training and things like that. So check out Archers Apps on your iTunes store. And also, I'm hoping that's where you'll be able to find this podcast. And if you listen to this, you'll already have found it. And hopefully we're going to get it on a few websites as well. So I'd just like to say thank you for joining us. And thank you, Simon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Keep shooting.